A few years ago, one of the kids in my online coaching program said to me, "Coach Rebecca, I wish we could just go to a gym and have you as our coach. We would all be so happy and so confident." And that warmed my heart, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that would be the best." And that comment stuck with me for years. So now I'm going to do something about it. I am inviting gymnasts from all over the country to join me for the first ever Confident Gymnast Camp this August 3rd and 4th. This camp is all about breaking through mental blocks. So if you're struggling with a skill and you want me and my team to help you break through in real time, then check out confidentgymnast.com for details.
I was a gymnast for many moons. I went to College of William & Mary. It wasn't always a smooth path. My sophomore year of high school, I moved away from home to train, and that wasn't a good fit. I didn't qualify for nationals the first year I had the chance. I fell on beam like three times, but the world kept spinning, and I learned, and I tried again. I was definitely a fearful gymnast. The thought of doing a souk by myself, I was just convinced I was going to land on my face. We took a year, and I did a front twist vault, and then I learned a front handspring front, and I went on to be former school record holder at my college because I just took a different path. Just grateful that I was given the opportunity. It wasn't a you do this or else. Over the last several years, I've been looking to donate to a charity that helped kids stay in sports, and I couldn't find one, so I just created it. I want kids to be able to stay in sport, not just for the physical benefit, but for the personal growth and development and the lessons that kids learn in sport. Whether it's a kid, they lose a parent, or there's a natural disaster and they lose their home, having that one place that you go to that stays the same gives them that sense of normalcy. They can keep going to gym, be with their team, they retain their identity. And so it doesn't have to be a big grand gesture. We want to help as many kids as we can stay in the game.
What do you think is the best thing that you got out of gymnastics that kind of fuels you to want to help kids get into sport?
That's a tough question because it would be hard to pick one.
Hi guys, on today's podcast, I'm interviewing Kirsten Medeiros, who's a former D1 gymnast, former coach, who is also a gymnastics mom, that's starting a nonprofit all about helping keep kids in sports. Even though you love it, even though you're great at it, not everybody has the financial means to go as far as they'd like in sport. So her project is starting to change that. So you'll learn how you can chip in to that process and also learn what she's learned along her gymnastics journey that's helping her to be a better gymnastics mom today. Here we go. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of the Perform Happy podcast. My guest today is Kirsten Medeiros, who wears many hats that are applicable to our podcast. She was a former D1 gymnast. She's been a gymnastics coach. She is parenting a high-level gymnast, and she has created a nonprofit that helps athletes who might not otherwise be able to continue their sport. Kirsten, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So where do we start? I always like to start with a little background. So, you know, it's obviously always a long path to get to D1 gymnastics, but can you tell us a little bit about your background as an athlete before we get into your other hats?
Sure. I was a gymnast for many moons, and actually my sophomore year of high school, I moved away from home to train, and that wasn't a good fit. And I moved back home and spent the next 2 years at the same gym I had grown up at, and then went to College of William & Mary to compete gymnastics, and just had the best time doing gymnastics. And I fell in love with the sport when I was 8, and I haven't given it up yet. It wasn't always a smooth path. As I said, you know, I moved away from home. I came back home. I swallowed my pride and showed up at the door saying, "Can I come back?" I didn't qualify for nationals the first year I had the chance. I fell on beam like three times, you know, but the world kept spinning, and I learned and I tried again. And so I think that's really part of my love, is just always been about the love of the sport.
Yeah. It is like a black hole. It sucks you in and you can't get out no matter how hard you try. I tried to get away from it and it's like my heart was stuck in this sport. For better or for worse, I just can't get away from it. So you ended up in college. Now, did you ever have any mental struggles on the road to college?
Oh, yes. I was definitely a fearful gymnast. I am still good friends with my coaches, and so they will tell you that we had to be creative in skill selection along the way. Some things just didn't work. So it was really more, I was also in a small town, and so I didn't see a lot of competition until I got to bigger meets. And so then I would have the imposter syndrome. What am I doing here? Little fish in a big pond, all of a sudden feeling. So I had a lot of challenges that I had to learn to work through. That's why you're so helpful. And if I had known you had existed many moons ago, resources like you offer really would have been valuable.
That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because little 14-year-old me desperately needed me, and I didn't know I wasn't the only one. And I have yet to interview anybody who's a gymnast who did not have a mental struggle. I mean, I joke with the kids on our group trainings, like, you guys, we didn't choose playing checkers with kindergartners as our sport. We chose
Hard.
gymnastics. It's hard, or figure skating, or club cheer, or diving. I mean, these are scary, challenging skills that we're learning. Of course, your brain is going to give you a little resistance. So now your coaches, you said you're friends with them, and you said that they were creative with you. I mean, this is something that I see, that growth mindset that you and I have talked about before, that can make or break a kid's path. You know, because like me, I thought to myself, well, I can't do a back handspring on the beam. I'm broken. I quit, basically. So who was the one who gave you those creative options? Was it the coach who said, let's try something different? Were you the one who brought it up? How did that work?
It was definitely my coaches. I remember, right when you get to the point where you're flipping vaults, the thought of doing a souk by myself, I was just convinced I was going to land on my face. Like it just wasn't going to go. And so we took a year and I did a front twisting vault. And then I learned a front handspring front. And I went on to be, I was the former school record holder at my college. Many moons ago, because I just took a different path and it worked. My brain said I can do that. And so, it wasn't fast, but it worked really well for me. And so I'm just grateful that I was given the opportunity. It wasn't a you do this or else.
Yeah, great. So then you have two kids, right? They're both in sort of scary sports. You also have a skateboarder, right?
I do.
Yeah, which oh my gosh, my 8-year-old wanted a skateboard for Christmas, and I was like, oh boy, well, kiss your tailbone goodbye, darling. But so now watching especially your daughter getting into the sport of gymnastics, did you have any hesitation of, what am I gonna is this a good path for her, or were you all in with the, tiny tot stuff, and how did that go?
She chose to start ballet first. And then after a year of that was what she would call bored. And so she switched over to gymnastics at about five. And I just picked the closest gym. There wasn't a lot of, what this is could lead into kind of thing, right? It was let's just get started and see. I to this day, sometimes I wish she had done something completely that I knew nothing about, right? There are challenges with being well-versed in the sport, but I love watching her enjoy and have her own path in gymnastics. So it's really been exciting.
Okay, what are some of the mistakes you might have made, or tips for the parents who maybe know a little too much?
Oh, that's a really hard question because we have gone through a couple gyms and had different experiences. And there are things where I sat back when now I wish I hadn't. And there are things that I just need to shut my mouth and let her experience it on her own and figure it out. Part of that is having her find her own voice. But that's really hard when you're little. Now that she's older, she can speak up, right? But when they're little and you're not in there because they're there for 4 hours, trying to balance finding their own voice versus being, I'm the adult, I know it's right here, and let me help. So that was a challenge for me.
Where does that feel like the cutoff is? You know, I have my own opinion on sort of when does the kid take the reins of communication and at what point does mom kind of step in? What do you feel like would be a good guideline for maybe someone who's got an 8 or 9 or 10 year old who might be struggling?
That's really your wheelhouse. I'm like, that's hard for me to say. I would say, you know, certainly fear and tears and not want, losing motivation and trying to get to the bottom of something they really once loved, what's going on. And sometimes it's a simple thing as, you know, I don't like Tammy in my group. And sometimes it's, you know, a much bigger issue. But trying to dive into that and ask the right questions. And I think at the end of the day, it's being curious and asking questions that hopefully you can get it out of them and help guide that response as being a good listener and active, you know, participant.
Absolutely. I completely agree that we as parents are naturally, we want to fix it. You know, my little 6-year-old went to her, I think it was second grade, in tears, doesn't know the teacher. She's miserable. And so then my mama bear's like, I have to send a lot of emails right now about this. Meanwhile, after I've had a conversation with the principal and I've talked to the teacher, I talked to her old teacher, I did all this stuff. Week 3, she's totally settled in and fine. And I'm like, okay, Rebecca, maybe that was a little bit much. So it was a little unnecessary. So sometimes we can ride it out a little. And like you said, sometimes you need to switch gym. Sometimes your mama bear instinct, that intuition is right. And you kind of have to go with it, which is why I love our community where we can be like, am I freaking out? Should I send this email? Or should I just take a breath and ask some good questions? Or should I do nothing? Because I think it's so multifaceted to know how to parent in general, but let alone how to parent a kid who's doing these big, scary skills. So, when did you start your nonprofit? Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now to keep kids in the sport and just tell us all about it?
You bet. So over the last several years, I've been looking to donate to a charity that helped kids stay in sports. I asked the community at large and I couldn't find one. So I just created it. So there's a couple of us. I'm not in it all by myself. I do it with Kevin, my partner in crime, and my friend Christine. And all of us are lifelong athletes who really believe that sport shaped our lives. I'm a physical therapist by education and trade, and movement is medicine. So I really think I want kids to be able to stay in sport, but also not just for the physical benefits, right? Like we know it builds muscle and bone density, and we know that it decreases obesity and diabetes, but the reason you and I are here is for the personal growth and development and the lessons that kids learn in sport, that really it's a unique atmosphere. Yes, there's school, but that coaching and that working with a team, that learning through failure in a safe space that sport offers really sets kids up for success in their future. So I really wanted to be able to offer that. The other thing, you know, whether it's a kid has a parent, they lose a parent, or there's a natural disaster and they lose their home, like we just had tornadoes in Tennessee. Having that one place that you go to that stays the same gives them that sense of normalcy. Like they can keep going to gym. Things are chaos at home. Maybe they have a sick sibling or, you know, but if they can keep going to that gym or that practice or that soccer field and be with their team, they retain their identity and really want to help kids do that.
Awesome. So how, that's my big question is, you know, let's say that there's a, you know, a kid who's had a tragedy and they still love their sport, but now the finances are tough. Where do you guys come in?
We do. So we, as I said, we just started last year. So we are very much in the grassroots stage. There's three ways that we, you know, partner with gyms or clubs. One is, like you mentioned, nominations. So either a coach or a parent, a team member, the team parent can nominate an athlete and explain a little bit about their circumstances that they're comfortable with. And we can reach out and reach out to the club or reach out to the family and say, what do you need? How can we help? Can we help pay tuition for a couple of months to just keep you on your feet so that little Susie can keep going to practice? Whether it's organizations can partner with us. So if they added, $1 to every registration for a big soccer tournament, we could raise $1,000 and help little Susie stay in the gym for 2 months, whatever. So there's different ways. And then, of course, good old cold hard cash. We love donations because that helps keep the lights on, so to speak, and keep us moving forward.
And how do you decide who is, the worthy recipient of the benefit?
Yeah, so we look at what's going on and we want to help as many people as we can. And maybe that's not paying for a full year. So there's obviously different circumstances and things, and some don't need much. Maybe they're in recreational sport where it's not talent-based, right? We are not, it is anyone who wants to show up at soccer practice but doesn't have the funds for cleats, we'll get you cleats, or you can't pay for travel, uniforms. We can help with that. So it doesn't have to be a big grand gesture. We want to help as many kids as we can stay in the game.
Wow. I mean, what an amazing idea. Was this something that just came to you?
Yes. I mean, I've tried to figure out how to make it. As I said, I looked for other charities and I couldn't find one that did exactly what I wanted. So we just built it.
I love that. I mean, that's like my story too. It doesn't exist. Let's make it happen.
Right.
So if somebody wants to contribute, how do they find you? Or if someone wants to nominate somebody, what's the best way to get a hold of you to participate?
Sure. So our website is thelineupfoundation.com because we want to keep kids in the lineup. And there are links there to donate, to nominate, to volunteer, because we obviously need resources, whether that's helping with the books or whether that's hosting an event or a fundraiser. So there's lots of ways that you can nominate us. And you can also email us. Right now it's stayinthelineup@gmail.com. And we is a small team, so we will get back to you and help. And it starts very small and it just grows.
Oh, that's so wonderful. It makes me think about Toni Ann Williams, who I interviewed. She was the first Jamaican gymnast Olympian. And she has, created a foundation where she's helping kids in Jamaica have the resources that they need. And I think we really take it for granted in this very privileged sport that we hang out in, that there are kids who could be the next Simone Biles who are, just not able to participate in those sports. And so it's great to be able to start something little and then hopefully it'll grow and be able to give give those kids a place to move their bodies and feel good about themselves. And so I know you talked a little bit about like movement as medicine. What do you think is the best thing that you got out of gymnastics that kind of fuels you to want to help kids get into sport? Hey guys, quick announcement break. Right now, we at Complete Performance Coaching are looking for 5 athletes who are ready to break through their mental blocks for good. If that sounds like you or your child, then sign up for a free consultation call with one of my amazing coaches as soon as possible to see if you're a good fit for our Perform Happy Elite training program. This program includes one-on-one coaching with the world's top mental performance coaches, plus tons of support for athletes and their parents in between sessions. You can sign up today at completeperformancecoaching.com/consult. Talk to you soon.
That's a tough question because it would be hard to pick one. Some of my very dearest friends were my college teammates. I'm still in touch with many of them, and the gymnastics community as a whole. Being in the sport for this long, from the time I started when I was 8 till now, I know a lot of people. So I love the people that I've met. But really, it's about grit and resilience and bouncing back from failure, about learning through lessons and learning that it's okay to make mistakes and that that's an important part of growth. I think that's probably the thing that I've taken most into my professional career and changing, changing the place that I show up to work every day as a physical therapist has really been shaped by learning and adapting and things that I would credit learning through sport.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of gymnasts, it either attracts perfectionists or breeds perfectionists or both. I think it kind of comes from both sides. And so a lot of gymnasts, I think by nature or athletes in general, are kind of demanding perfection of themselves. I can't fail. Got to be perfect. It's got to be great. I have a meet coming up. Don't mess up. Don't fall. Don't fail. It's like this constant loop of don't screw up, Rebecca, that I still have to sort of fight off and be like, it's okay. Failure is actually the path. It's like we're avoiding this straight shot to success by fearing failure, that you have to not make it. Jonathan Horton didn't, he was the worst, he got dead last at his first elite competition. And then he goes on to be a two-time Olympian. If he would have gone, oh, well, I'm not cut out for this, then we would never have had his amazing story. So I think it's great to go like, no, this gives you an opportunity to fail. Everybody, how valuable. Let's get these kids out there failing and picking themselves up and failing and picking themselves up so that they become these strong, resilient humans. I mean, and so imagine you see that in your daughter, that her big failures are there. That's where we learn the most. Are there any failures that that you look at her journey and go, wow, I'm so glad that she was able to have that experience that in the moment might have felt devastating or like, oh, I can't handle this for her?
Her first year of level 7 was rough. She'll let me say that. it was rough. There was confidence issues. The flyaway was just going to give her all the grief in the world. And that was when I have to say we were grateful that COVID kind of cut that season short, because it was hard. She repeated level 7 the next year and was the regional champion in region 1. So there's lessons there that she got through it and thrived. So we will absolutely say that, yeah, it's hard. And perfectionism in gymnastics, in basketball, you could miss 5 shots in a game and no one would think it was a bad game. And in gymnastics, it's so, you literally have a judge who's watching what you do. And so the mindset is so different, but learning, it's not this one moment in time, and looking at the bigger picture and zooming out is so valuable. And now with so many years involved in the sport and just life, seeing that, big picture is really what motivates me to help other people, stay in sport and have those experiences.
And are you able to transmit that to your kids, that concept of zoom out? This is not a crisis. I mean, have you been able to apply that in your family?
You tell me. You get to work with her. But I'd say little dude is he skateboarding is brutal because you learn on concrete. But he will just go and go and go and go and go until he gets something. And it's pretty much self-taught, which is very different than the structure of gymnastics. Like, they must be the polar opposite sports, except that they both have a lot of orthopedic fears.
PT in you is like, oh boy.
I know really lots of orthopedists. But yes, I absolutely try to instill that failure is normal. And I definitely just have different kids too, right? So Elder is the straight A perfectionist in all things, the younger free spirit, it's okay kind of thing. So they just have different personalities, but they both benefit from their sport.
Mm-hmm. And It's great to point that out too, because even you and your daughter, who are same sport, maybe similar personalities, like at least me and my oldest, we've got a lot in common, but there are different things that would work for them. And I've seen this a lot with mom's a gymnast and daughter's a gymnast, where the mom goes, "Oh, well, what will work is visualize, meditate, whatever, affirmations." Mom will sort of come in with this playbook of, "Hey, I have an inside scoop because I did this." And the kid's like, "Mom, none of that works for me." And it can be so frustrating, because I'll talk to the athlete and they're like, "My mom wants me to do all this stuff, but it doesn't help." Did you make any of those mistakes, or do you have anything that actually that she sort of has carried on through your experience?
I definitely made those mistakes. I am very human and would try to help. And then I learned that there's value in letting them outsource help, letting them see that I don't know the answers to everything and I can't fix everything, and that's okay. And normalizing working with someone else, right? Whether it's a different coach, whether it's a psychologist. Just trying to normalize discussions of what I'm doing isn't working, please help me. Asking for help in general is something I really want people to do. And whether that's mentally or financially, like if we can't help you if we don't know what the need is. So I'm trying to empower them to ask for help at a young age.
Yes, and I think the power of learning to receive is something that is underrated. And I had a therapist once tell me, "Rebecca, you need to start getting massages because you need to practice receiving." Because, and I think for a lot of people, we give and give and give, and then the concept of receiving is like, "Oh, well, no, not me." And I imagine there are families out there in need who are like, no. We make our own way. We do our, like, I'm trying to get rid of a jogging stroller. My kids have outgrown it. I'm like, I'm not cramming a 5-year-old into this thing. We're done with this. And so a woman wanted to buy it, and I said, "Well, hey," she said, "Oh, you know what? I can't afford it." I was like, "Take it." She's like, "No, I couldn't do that." I'm like, "I want the thing off my porch. I
You're
want you to
doing me a
have it.
favor.
Yeah, you're doing me a favor. I would do you a favor," but she wouldn't take it. I'm like, ah, oh, it's, I want to challenge, I guess, anyone out there who might have their heartstrings tugged of, we really could use that help. Is there a moment where you can receive? Or kids, if you actually do need that spot, see if you can say yes to it, or see if you can ask for that help. And that's something I'm trying to teach my kids too, is if you need help, ask for it. And I have to watch myself as a mom, be like, "You're fine. You don't need me to get you. You don't need my help." But to be like, "Hey, good job asking for help." Because I think we get sort of trained out of that. We're like, "I have to be independent. I have to do this on my own. I can't need help. No, it's fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine." I hear so many 12-year-old girls who just, they're not fine, but they don't know how to say, "I'm not fine. Yes, okay, please help me."
Right.
So anybody out there, this is your challenge to say, "Okay, I'm not fine. I do need some help. I do want to, Kirsten, I think I could use a little help with tuition." Or, "I think I could, athletes, I think I probably do need a spot on that skill." Like, that's my challenge, is to get out of your comfort zone and actually ask and receive. Parents, go get a massage. You give so much. If that's within reach, allow yourself to be guided or given to. I don't know about you, but that's a hard thing for me.
Oh yeah. There's little time for that, and trying to prioritize self is low on the list.
Yeah. Well, and like one of my favorite parenting resources, Dr. Becky Kennedy, she talks about learn to accept the guilt of self-care. Learn to just accept it. You're going to feel guilty leaving your family to go on that hike, and that's okay. Do it anyway.
Yeah.
You're going to feel guilty asking for that extra support from your coach. It's okay. Do it anyway. You might feel guilty asking for a little bit of financial support, but that's okay. Do it, accept that feeling, and also receive that help. I mean, moms out there, go do something that you feel guilty about to take care of yourself, and that you put your oxygen mask on, and then you can help others even more.
It's ego, right? We don't want to think that we need it and let others know that we can't do it all, and surrendering to it and saying, yes, I do need that help. it's not forever, but if you can help me get to A, B, or C, or if it's mom and I just need to go for my hike so that I have my sanity so when I get back, I'm a better parent. But someone's going to judge me because I left my kids while I went hike, right? Like it's ego. It's not, no one's going to think you're a bad person if you exercise.
Yeah. Well, and I think also it can be helpful to remember that coach wants to support you. I want you to have that jogging stroller. I want to be the shoulder you cry on. That feels good. That's actually a gift you're giving. Somebody wants to be able to contribute the finances that they have disposable to this. So give them the opportunity to help you, you know, yes. Give the gift of letting people have that heart glow of service in their lives. I think that's awesome. Something important to remember is I'm always like, I don't want to burden people, but actually I give them an opportunity to feel great and useful when I allow people to help me.
That's a fantastic way to frame it, right? I you're giving someone else, it feels good to help others. And so when you get to do that, it, you know, you're helping me if you accept, you know, support.
Amazing. Great. Will you tell us the website one more time so that people know how to find you?
It's thelineupfoundation.com. It's nice. Super easy. We do have an Instagram page, which is Lineup Foundation. You'll see us. And stayinthelineup@gmail.com. We're happy to help. We're excited. It's a new venture and it really helps us get connected with different sports outside of gymnastics as well, which is fun for me to be involved with some of the other things that are huge around here in Southern California. So I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you, Kirsten, so much for what you're doing. You are a great mom. I'm so excited. I'm so glad to have you and your daughter in my community. And I can't wait to help contribute more to the work you're doing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for you. We love you.
Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of the Perform Happy Podcast. If you're ready to unlock your maximum sport potential, head over to performhappy.com and join us. You'll be training alongside world champion athletes and Olympic hopefuls. And I will personally take you through my research-based system for overcoming fear and mental blocks, building confidence, and finding your flow. I'm Coach Rebecca Smith, and I'll see you next time.